Biden, you know, from his campaign promises for what he said he was going to do to what has he done? Everything that he's said so far, he's systematically dismantled, gave away to the Republicans for no reason at all. And so if you're a Democrat right now, registered Democrat, American Democrat, watching him do this, watching Congress and your elected officials just sell you out for pennies, really. I mean, what is going through your mind right now? Oh, well.
Are you going to be better off in the United States or in an independent California? Not these are your benefits. It's like, are you really going to be better off in America? Is America going to, is there going to be something recognizable as America or something that you would want to recognize as America? Or is that California? Or is, you know, is that future California for you?
Everybody, Darren Brown here. This is the California Dream. And in today's episode, we have two special guests. This past weekend, I got a chance to sit down and talk with Hal Lohr and Shankar Singham. They are the co-hosts of the new Red Star Report YouTube channel. And they have both been involved in California independence movement and Calexit for some time. So I talked to them about how they started out as activists, how they became involved, what they're doing right now, and what their thoughts are about the future going forward. It was a really good conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. So with me today are two guests. This is Hal Lohr and Shankar Singham. They are the hosts of the Red Star Report, which is a new video podcast. It's available on YouTube. And Shankar has Activism in Action segment, and Hal has Talking Points. And I wanted to have them on to talk a little bit about California independence and how they became involved with it, and a little bit about this new media enterprise and where they think the future is headed. So welcome, Hal and Shankar.
Hello, Darren.
Hello, Darren. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
Thank you for having us.
So why don't we start with a little bit about how you got involved in activism, how you got started with this, and what your background is, and why this is important to you. Why don't we start with Hal?
Okay. Well, my first brushes with activism kind of go back to basically just after high school, when I was early college, when my girlfriend at the time, the later wife, her father got me involved with the Warehousers Union, basically part of the Longshoremen's Union, and with strikes and union work. Sort of inauspicious, but that was kind of where I started. Later on, after college, some environmental stuff. I've done a lot of beach cleanups, but not really terribly involved in political activism. Until sometime around 2015, when I was sitting around basically in the run-up to that election, and I was literally sitting on the couch yelling at the television. I mean, I was just watching people talking about the politics of the day, and I found myself just frustrated and screaming, and of course, my lovely wife looked at me and pretty much did one of those, if you feel that strongly about it, why don't you go do something? I'm not sure whether she regrets those words or not now, but I started looking around and what could I do? What could be done? And I, you know, California independence, all of a sudden that crossed my path. It's like, or across my video feed or across something. I don't remember exactly what. This was a subject, and it was a subject that my father, even my father and I, back when I was, from the time I was 12 years old, have been talking about. Which means, you know, it's like, I can say that I've been involved in California independence in a casual manner since for the last 42 years. Anyway, and how I got involved with California independence was that I got involved with the movement. I found out where a meeting was being held. I went online. I signed up just like everybody else does. I got directed to a very old coffee shop here in Long Beach, Hot Java.
I've heard about this meeting.
Yeah, Hot Java. Hot Java on the corner of, what is it? Junipero and...
Broadway.
I don't remember.
Or PCH, Broadway.
Broadway? Is it Broadway in Junipero? Went in and sat down, you know, walked in late. And I very embarrassed. I walked in late and found a very dapper fellow named Don Sutton sitting there. And the meeting was over and everybody pretty much had shuffled out. And he very kindly sat down and went through the entire meeting with me again. Talked to me about everything that was going on. And I've been involved ever since. I've been involved ever since. That was in the run-up to the 2016 election.
Yeah, the 2016 election, I was involved in the Bernie campaign a little bit and, of course, was disappointed at the outcome. And it was really the second time around, I think, that kind of hit me over the head. I needed twice. I had to be hit on the head twice.
I understand that. No, that's to my way of thinking, there's that California independence moment that happens when you start looking at things and go, how is change even possible under these circumstances any other way? Most of the people I know who are involved in the California independence movement have to a certain degree anyway, are fed up with U.S. politics. I mean, for me, it's like I said, it's like, I'm not a young man. It's like, I've seen time after time, you know, hopes go up, hopes go down, the new, you know, somebody new comes into office and bang, we're right back where we started. And yeah. How do you get around that? California independence kind of is one of the only things I can think of that actually gets around that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I've been paying attention to politics for quite a while. I haven't been, you know, involved like in activism for that long, but you do see the same kind of problems. And you know, it's like if you haven't been able to solve it by this time, I don't think it's going to get solved.
Agreed. I mean, I agree. That's one of the things. One of the things that we need to make the message. It's like we've been saying it on air on Red Star Report. We have Black Lives Matter, yet Martin Luther King Jr. has been dead for 50 years. How long is it going to really take? I mean, and that's as an example, you know, how long is it going to take? Women's rights. How long have women been waiting on the ERA? How long did it take to recognize, you know, the legal status of, you know, of the LGBTQ community getting married? How long does this stuff take? And is it ever set in stone? Is it ever done? It's like one administration will grant rights, the next will roll them back. Voting right, you know, it's like we're 50 years since Martin Luther King and voting rights just got rolled back.
Mm-hmm.
How does that end? It's like, it's a joke. It's like, I don't know if the U.S. federal government could order pizza, let alone solve America's problems.
How about you, Shankar? How did you first become involved with this? What's your history background?
How I first got involved, it was well, it's a realization, first of all. I'm sure as it hits all of us here, at least, that you're Californian and you're not American. And it hits us all in different parts of our lives, different times in our lives, that thought hits you. It doesn't translate like that, but it translates as if I don't really agree with that American, the perception that Americans are this and this and this. But after Bernie had the election stole from him, let's just say what it is, Darren, because I mean, I'm not going to mince words with it, stolen from him from the Democratic Party for Hillary. You knew all that, there's no hope for the country. If the party that you think that was your chance to get your guy who overwhelmingly supported that guy cheated, you knew whoever won was going to be just a criminal no matter what. So at that point, the CNP had an advertisement, I think, on Facebook, and I checked it. I went and became a CNP member. And in one of their meetings, they were talking about this group. I won't mention their names. And I actually checked them out, and they were a lot more active. They had a lot more funding. I became a regional leader for Orange County. I had about 1,000 memberships underneath, people underneath me who depended on me to spread this message of independence and get the word out. And we were extremely well funded. I'm not going to mention any names of whom or for what, but that was all great and fine and dandy until, let me digress. That's when I realized I was a Californian and not American. You know, things happen with organizations. They break up. They people get away. The independence movement has had that adventure itself, as a lot of orgs have come and gone with it. And but no matter what, this is independence. We're fighting for a country of our own, a nation. We're building a nation from scratch. There's no blueprint. There's no plan for it. There's no timeline for it. There's no expiration date for it. I wish I could tell you how we're going to do it. We've been asked a million times. I can't. All I can say is that it's not going anywhere, the movement. The idea is not disappearing. It never really has. And I made my mind up, a year being into it, that I'm in it for the long haul. I'm going to be in it until independence happens, or at least some sort of autonomy where we're not tied to the wars, to the civil rights questionings, to the racism, to the international perception and perceptions of the United States. Until we're not, California's not tied to it, because California is none of those things that are tied to America. Until that happens, in some way, you can call it independence, you can call it whatever you want, but until that those things happen, we have our own court system, superior court system. We have our own foreign policy that's for your community and my community here in California, our local community that benefits us locally. Until that happens, Darren, I'm not stopping, bro. And I know there's a lot of people that aren't either. And there's a lot of 1 in 3 Californians do support independence. Those people are asleep right now. They're waiting for us. They're waiting for something to happen. And right now, what you have in the United States, you have an absolute screw over. I mean, we're watching Biden screw the American people over over and over again with the student debt forgiveness that's gone. This infrastructure plan, that's a gift not to us. Everything that he's put up there, he's just giving away. And what are Democrats thinking right now? If you're a registered Democrat and you're an American citizen, you're a Democrat, what are you thinking right now? You're literally watching yourself being sold out in Congress. Yeah, I mean, what Biden, from his campaign promises for what he said he was going to do to what has he done? Everything that he's said so far, he's systematically dismantled, gave away to the Republicans for no reason at all. And so if you're a Democrat right now, registered Democrat, American Democrat, watching him do this, watching Congress and your elected officials just sell you out for pennies, really. I mean, what is going through your mind right now? Oh, well, who are you going to vote for the next time? These same people? Nobody else can come up in our election system. Your voting rights are getting taken away. I mean, what are they thinking right now? I wish Californians would remember us right now, the independence movement right now. And there are 1 in 3 Californians do support us. And they're waiting for something like what's happening right now to exacerbate even more and culminate to a point of civil war, which I do believe is we're on the precipice of a good civil war. None of it going to touch us here in the West Coast, but if those left-leaning Americans have any spine at all, they should fight for these rights because they're about to get just stomped on by the right and the majority white supremacist class that's ruling the United States right now. I'm sorry for ranting to Darren. My mistake, bro.
Oh, that's okay. That's something I wanted to talk about a little later. We were talking, I don't know, it was a couple of weeks ago over the phone, and I mentioned something that this happened like last summer. This was before I really had really heard of independence or anything, but it was during the protests and everything that was going on. And I came to this realization that my whole life that I had thought that, although, Americans have differences over, maybe tax policy. Like some people like higher taxes, some people like lower taxes. Some people like a little more regulation, a little less regulation. Some people are a little more socially conservative, some people a little more liberally. There's kind of this band of, that people exist in politically, but I thought that there was some fundamental foundational core beliefs that were just part of what Americans agreed on, even no matter where you were in the spectrum. And that just completely went out the window last summer for me. And I realized, holy crap. Like all these things that I thought that we agreed on for decades or past 100, 200 years, that we were just working out the differences. Like we never had any agreement from the beginning. Like this goes back to the Civil War and before the Civil War, these kind of issues. This is not like a recent thing, because when you look at like things like the voting rights and things like that, this goes back. You can say, well, how far does this go back? Does this go back to the 60s? Does it go back to there? And then you can even trace it back further than that. So that was kind of a realization for me.
No, one of the things that people have been saying is that one of the worst things that the internet has done, or that and has done to politics, is that Americans have actually gotten to see what Americans look like, and how Americans think, and how Americans act, and what Americans do. There's a realization that all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute. Attitudes like in the Deep South and so forth have not really changed. I mean, we're now seeing that it's like we woke up in a country that we thought was much more evolved as Californians than it really is. And this has been a shock for people. Especially for us, especially for those involved in California independence. It's like, how do you fix America when the South hasn't changed attitudes about generally almost anything since the 1950s? Are we gonna be able to change their minds and change their voting? Make them are they suddenly going to become more tolerant or less, you know? I don't know. And people, and we have a lot of people today, right now, especially with Biden in office, who are thinking, oh yeah, well, look what happened in Georgia. Well, look what happened in Georgia. Georgia, through heroic, I mean, Herculean efforts, ended up going for Biden and ended up electing Democratic senators. And as soon as they were done doing that, their own legislature immediately started changing the rules. That's what we're dealing with. That's who they really are. You know, and that's not changing and that apparently isn't changing anytime soon.
The 2024 election is, I think it's like we're staring down the barrel of a gun. I mean,
it's going to be Trump.
If you look at the last election and everything, well, regardless of the outcome, half the country is not going to accept it.
Right.
And I think people are, each side is thinking that these divisions are going to, they're going to win over the rest of the country or something. And it's just not going to happen, I don't think.
Let's face it, it's like being on a train that we know is heading towards the precipice. We know we're heading for a train wreck. 2024, we're heading for a train wreck, and we're fighting to make sure that everyone's fighting to make sure that the other side does not pull the brake lever. 2022, if you look at 2022, I mean, it's like, we can predict, and it's like pundits are already predicting, that the Republicans are going to pick up enough seats, especially with the gerrymandering efforts and whatever is going on now. They're going to pick up enough seats that they're going to flip the House. The Senate will probably stay where it is. The Democrats might pick up a seat. And then we're basically back in the same boat we were after the first 2 years of the Obama administration, where we're going to have complete government lockdown. And we're facing runaway climate change. And we're facing, you know, tremendous social political issues and financial problems and, you know, everything from global warming to homelessness. And we're about to walk, and we're like 14 months away from government lockdown. So nothing will get fixed. And then in 2024, Shankar's right. The Republicans are either going to run Trump, or the bigger likelihood is they're going to run a smoother, more Trumpy version of Trump. And if that wins, if that person wins, and there's, you know, jump ball. Well, let's say it will be if we look at Republican candidates, there's a case of, you know, people are like, what could possibly be worse than Trump? And I'm like, I don't know. Do you think they're going to run Ted Nugent for president next? I mean,
Tucker Carlson.
I mean,
a golden retriever.
Honestly, from where we sit in California, it's like it honestly looks like the conservatives in America literally put everybody's name in a hat, and then they sit around and argue over, well, who's the worst possible choice we can make? And then they go get that person. Then they go find them. And we're not likely to see an end to that trend. But at the same time, we're facing all this. We're facing things that need to be done. Yeah. We're facing stuff that needs to get fixed. How's that supposed to end for California? if we're part of the USA? That's a question. That's a good, that's an honest question.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on 24, Shankar?
Before I get into 2024, it's going to be Trump or Golden Retriever. Somebody, you know, less intelligent than Trump or it's going to be Trump. But last week, a lobbyist, a paid lobbyist for ExxonMobil, who thought he was going for a job interview, but was really getting interviewed by a Greenpeace activist, on video stated all of the congressmen that he was paying, how he got things passed in Congress, how he influences legislation, how the game is played in Washington, D.C. He divulged all of it on video. It came out to the whole world. Everybody can see this now. I don't see it on any of the major news networks, media networks, because they're all part of the cabal. And Americans don't give a shit. They don't care. They don't care that they're being screwed. I hope Californians don't feel like that, even though they're conditioned the same way. But you have all the evidence right there of how the game is played in Washington, D.C. And it's covered by the Young Turks. It's covered by various smaller left-leaning media companies. But it's not mainstream. And it'll never be mainstream. The cat is out of the bag. And what did the guy say when he got caught? Oh, my apologies. My viewpoints aren't with ExxonMobil. Those are strictly my viewpoints. It was a terrible mistake. Chuckled and laughed about it. And what was ExxonMobil's response to that? So one of the topics they covered was climate change, right? And how this lobbyist got Congress to vote on certain aspects of legislation against global warming, right? So they ask ExxonMobil, hey, this guy just came out and said all this. What do you think? You know what they said? They said, we've always been studying the and tracking the climate in global climate change. We've always been tracking global climate change. Now, that statement right there was the exact statement the lobbyist said that he used to pay the Congress. Just, he told ExxonMobil to say the statement every time and in the recording. I mean, it's just mind-blowing. It's just mind-blowing. I don't know how much more the U.S. Americans want to take of this. I don't know. I mean, it's just an open screwing, and they just hang out with their butts out. They don't care. They Americans must love it. I don't know. And it's going to be Trump 2024. You have the evangelicals who think he's God, who's going to put him in power, who support him today, and that's a powerful. It's a powerful part of the country is the Bible Belt, these evangelicals. And yes, Trump 2024. That's for sure.
Yeah. I just think we need to be kind of cold and analytical about what's going on. If you look at the evidence that if I had to bet, I don't think the country is lasting another 5 or 10 years. I don't see how it can take another 2 presidential election cycles. I mean, when you look at what happened the last election, that's not going to get better. There's so many problems that the country faces that it's not able to deal with. The division's just increasing. And so, I mean, we need to take an honest look at this and say, you know, it's not just about, is this a good idea? It's, we need to do this. We need to think about this for self-protection at this point. It's a matter of self-preservation.
Darren, I don't understand that. I don't understand. So look, maybe you can clear this up for me, because I don't think any of that matters, because as long as the Wall Street's doing great, the banks are doing great, people are getting paid, this fiat currency or whatever we're using right now, as long as that's floating, as long as that's good, I don't think America, anybody, they give a crap about other people's rights as long as that money is good and it's coming in to a specific class of people. And I think until that gets turned over, something happens to that wealth parade of wealth that's flowing in. Until that happens, man, United States is just gonna it's gonna exist, man. It's gonna exist in its and wallow in its.
Well, okay, it will. I guess my point on that is that the social tensions are going to become so unruly that it's going to go some bad direction socially, whether it's, you know, towards fascism or some kind of authoritarianism. That's going to lead to more problems. I guess that's the point I was trying to make, that they can continue on with the looting of the country, but at some point either it's just going to become, you know, the inequality is going to get so bad and people just sit there and take it, or I mean, it has to go one of two directions. It's either it has to go, you know, a left progressive direction that has solutions to it, or it goes towards fascism. It's one of those two directions.
Yeah.
There might be a third, and that's seems to be the path of least resistance, where nothing happens, nothing changes, and it just the United States basically goes the way of like some of the countries down in South America, where it just, or let's say Argentina, where it just progressively just gets worse and worse. And people still wave, you know, people will still be waving the flags and talking about what a great country it is. And they'll talk about the glory days and they'll talk about what's going on as pretty much the ruling class pillages and burns and, you know, sells off every picks over the bones of what was once a great empire, supposedly, you know, it's like, that's, we won't actually, I don't know if we'll actually see a collapse of America. I mean, we'll see a collapse of what we would like America to be. That's obvious. But an actual collapse of America as a they'll keep picking over the bones until there's nothing left but bones. That future isn't something that anybody should want to volunteer for. It's just, it's the lazy result. It's the lazy final result of basically complete, you know, another 20 years of complete political inaction, which is kind of what it looks like they're gearing up for. That's what, to me, that's what it looks like. One side would like to push us towards towards fascism, which will kind of be the default if it all falls apart. The other side wants to fix it.
Darren, so 2 years ago, man, you remember when the refugees were coming? They're still coming over here, of course. Nobody's asking why they're coming here, of course. Nobody wants to delve into that question. Just that, oh, it sucks there and they're coming here to the United States. So when they were coming here, they were separating families. And they've been doing this since Obama. And you have thousands of kids who can't find their parents. It's absolutely horrible, decrepit and evil. And so, you know, in independent California decides with other activists to raid the block of the home of the Southern Regional Director of Immigration Customs Enforcement, who lives right here in Los Alamitos. And so we do that, right? Because we're going to make him feel as uncomfortable as he's made these families, right? And so we do that. And it turns into a great success. I won't go into the details of it. If you want to check it out, there's links up on the IC site or also writes a report. But we chased this person, the director, out of his home. Neighbors absolutely pissed, right? The guy wants to sell his house. He keeps dropping the value because nobody wants to buy a protest house. Then that in turn makes the rest of the homes on that block, their value goes down. So, oh my God, you know, wow, we really did make an impact. We scared that guy. He had to leave his home and that whole neighborhood. That we hit him right in the pocketbook. They better not lock any more kids in cages. Guess what? It's still locked. We did nothing. Those people that we affected, that we went and targeted, they just got new people because they couldn't do their jobs anymore. This machine of the United States is a machine. There's nothing there's nothing that can be done when there's that income, that money that's involved with separating families, detention centers, funding detention centers. That money is too much. And a bunch of activists aren't going to change that.
Yeah, it's very profitable.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know what else to do but do a media company and just promote the goodness of California. And we don't talk about that because everything the United States does and how they make their money and how the world perceives them is not California at all. California doesn't make its money on war products. California makes its money on hemp and like weed products and like oils and stuff. California doesn't, and making movies and software and cool stuff. I mean, what does the United States produce? Gas, oil, guns. What else? I can't think of anything else. In fact, I can't think of anything that the United States has ever produced in the past 50 years that's of any significance. They never come up with shit. They ride off of our coattails here in California, which comes up with everything that's of any significance to modern mankind is from this state. And then you have, you know, people like Tesla leaving. Tesla, who's gotten every state benefit and tax break, not only from the Fed, but from the state as well. And we all we want him to do is pay his workers a little bit more and take care of his workers. And that was too much for Elon Musk. Elon Musk is the hero of the United States. They love Elon Musk. They love Elon Musk. And he's such a futurist. He's such a pioneer. He's a piece of shit in my book, Darren. I'm sorry for cursing, but he is. He can't take care of his workers, for one thing. He can't. He can't come meet California safety standards. He doesn't want to pay them what we want them to pay. So he packs up and leaves, and he goes to Texas. Great. Go to Texas, Elon Musk. This company has never been made a profit ever in its lifetime. Yet the shareholders get paid an exorbitant amount of money for what? I don't know what. That's government subsidized profit right there that they just collected. So the shareholders got some welfare from the United States government. Great. Thank you, Elon Musk. I mean, knowing all that, maybe he did propel maybe the electric car industry. I'm glad that happened. Maybe that's what it needed to take to get it to happen. Because now you got Chevy coming out, you got Ford coming out, all these other car companies are coming out with legit electric cars. Great. But Elon Musk, he wouldn't be who he was or what he could do if it wasn't for this state nurturing that kind of development. And that's what the state does, man. Believe me, if Elon Musk was like making like the new 80 caliber machine gun, there's no way this would ever happen in California. There's just no way you would find funding anywhere here or the state would do anything. I mean, it's not California doing something like that. So.
Yeah. And we talked a couple weeks ago about this, this myth of this massive exodus, which is not really there.
Right.
That there's this ton of people who are leaving and businesses that are fleeing. And when you actually look at the data and look at the numbers, it's not really happening.
No, it's not. But we're going to pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to pay for that. California's going to lose a congressional seat basically because of COVID. This kind of works out beautifully for our friends and for our conservative friends in the federal government, because it goes, California always gets the lion's share of immigrants and immigration. For the last nine out of 10 years, California, even though it's been slow, California's always seen increases in population until 2020, when everything was locked down. Everything's locked down. No immigration. No new people being counted on counted in the census. And what amounts to an extremely flawed census, or what could be argued as an extremely flawed census.
And Trump's policies also, his immigration policies.
So we basically have a one-year aberration. But because of the census, we're going to lose a congressional seat over this, even though that that one year when the census was being taken isn't an, you know, isn't an indication of actual growth in California. But for 10 years we're going to lose it. But for 10 years we're going to lose that congressional seat. Nice.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to add about the exodus. So they've been saying that for years and years and years and years. Every time there's an exodus, there's an exodus. And it's funny because they did the research on it real quick. And I forgot the name of the company that did the research, but they found out that the people leaving California were non-college graduates. So from 2012 to 2015, there was about 400,000 non-college graduates who left California. And from 2016 to 2019, there were 300,000. So we have about 800, almost a million, 800,000 people leave California in the past 7-8 years without any college degrees. Oh, okay. So that's pretty bad now, but people have been coming to California as well. So who came to California? Well, we got actually educated and income earners actually came into California. So we got about 600,000 college graduates into California in that same amount of time. So we lost 800,000 non-college graduates and we got back 600,000 college graduates with some earning potential. Now, I think that's a fair trade. I mean, it seems like we're exporting our stupid, which is fine, which explains clearly how the United States is, why they are the way they are, and we are the way we are. That the data represents the truth as far as I'm concerned, because you can clearly see why the United States is the way they are and why this state just keeps progressing and keeps moving and chugging along. I'll get you the name of that study. Is a fairly big research company, but yeah.
So why don't we talk about your new media venture? So tell people about Red Star Report, when you got started with it, what your plans are for it, and where they can find it.
Red Star Report, www.redstarreport.com is our website. We're on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter currently, and trying to expand outwards from there. We realized about 7 months ago that with what was going on between COVID, the lockdowns, and things going on within the activists, or within the California independence movement and the activist community, that what was at that point missing was a media organization for the independence movement. And we looked around and there had been other efforts, and some of those efforts are still ongoing. But what we kind of looked at was those efforts were piggybacking. We're trying to piggyback onto everything else. Whether it was an effort to try to run a candidate for publicity purposes in the recall. I mean, you know, no hope of winning. We're just going to run a candidate. Or we're going to launch a new initiative, even though we have no infrastructure in place to gather signatures on it. We kind of had to stop and step back and say, well, what are we needing? What are we looking at? And what we need, or what we needed within the movement, was something that was a grassroots org that was talking the talk, dedicated to the idea that we're going to keep talking and we're going to do this right. This is not going to be a grab the brass ring kind of effort. We're going to talk and we're going to keep putting the message out there and looking to reach more and more and more people. Working towards a confluence of things that goes, about 35% of Californians already would support an independent California, California independence, Cal exit, whatever moniker you want to put on it. Another 20 some odd percent are pretty, you know, they're open to the idea. what we needed was instead of trying to grab brass rings and instead of trying to find shortcuts and so forth, we just need to keep talking the talk. We need to keep putting it out there. We need to let people know that this is a thing and do it over, you know, basically keep saying it over and over and over again. On, you know, sort of an honest effort at it and a real life old school activism based on the idea of what happened with a sort of modernization of what happened with the legalized efforts for marijuana or for the attempts to get, gay marriage approved. These things took years and it didn't happen by big media events. It happened by people talking, spreading the news. So Red Star Report, was designed to fill a void. The weird part about it was we had absolutely no idea how to do it at the time. We're like, you know, what we need a media group. We know nothing about creating a media group. Absolutely zero. So we started from scratch. Started building videos, started talking, started learning how to record ourselves, what it took to do that. Trying to talk to people, trying to get people to come and talk to us. Shankar on board, it's like in his contacts, and I've been trying to do engineering. And that's where we're at now. It's like we fully admit that we're a work in progress. I think we've come a long way in a short period of time. I mean, Red Star Report is 6 months old. We've had 10 vlog casts so far, some other media. And, you know, now that we're starting to figure out, we're looking to get more people involved and we're looking to expand. That's where we're at. We actually are a part of a registered LLC. We're not a 501c3 C4. Despite what people seem to think, we're not an org. We're not an organization. We're not recruiting people. We're not gathering signatures now. We're just focusing with Red Star. We're just going to focus on the message and, you know, cross your fingers with luck. And we will be here for a long time.
So I think we lost Shankar for a moment. So why don't we wrap up? And are there any last final closing thoughts you want to leave everyone with? And if you forget something, that's fine, because I'm sure we'll have you and Shankar on many times in the future, in the coming months and years.
Well, final thoughts on it are that we're now in a situation where we're starting to come out of COVID. We're starting to see more and more events and more people, going places, doing things. So activism will also start to gear up again. For Red Star Report, one of the reasons we exist is we need to start to usher in sort of the new Cal Exit movement. A new version of it, one where we're not necessarily discussing the hows and whys or the merits, basically, of whether California will be better off as an independent country or not. This, I think, after 4 years, of discussion, we can kind of put that to bed. We need to start the discussion of when, how do we do it? We need to come at people from a Red Star Report standpoint, where we're asking, are you going to be better off in the United States or in an independent California? Not these are your benefits. It's like, are you really going to be better off in America? Is there going to be something recognizable as America, or something that you would want to recognize as America, or is that California? Or is, you know, is that future California for you? Because we can do it. We can go all day. We can go all day, you know, arguing over what would be the better way to do this or what would be the better way to do that in an independent California, but we have to get there. And it's time to start. It's time in our activism, I believe, to stop discussing the hows and whys and whether or not California will be better, because this is, we've pretty well argued that to death. We know we would be better off as an independent country. We'd be the fifth largest economy in the world. Everybody says it. Everybody admits it. Everybody agrees. We would not be involved in global wars. We could have governments that are more responsive, local governments that can deal with crises and problems. And we can basically stop, we can stop having to answer to a government that is 2,500 miles away. I know this will sound familiar, but has put us in a position of underrepresentation and overburdening of the economy. Or just more simply put, taxation without proper representation.
Yes, that's the crux of it. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and thank Shankar, and good luck with the report, and good luck with everything in the future. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon again sometime.
That would be terrific. Thank you for having us.
Great.